Hey everybody, Ben and Jason here, and we're bringing you a very special episode today, a little bit of a supplemental episode. We had one a couple weeks ago, you might remember, where we did an interview, current day, not about history necessarily, but this one is with Jen Briney. She hosts the Congressional Dish podcast. If you haven't heard of it, you should definitely check it out. It's a great show exposing some of the nitty-gritty parts of how Congress works, but we wanted to take this opportunity to talk with you and talk with Jen about how you should be involved in your local politics, in your federal politics that aren't necessarily the presidency, and why that's important and how you can make a difference.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy this episode, and remember, it's more than just a presidential election.
Yeah, and normally when we're talking about history, we try to lean away from saying anything positive or at least overly positive or overly negative about one candidate over the other. In this one, as it's a little more current day, we kind of, bared a little bit. Nothing too polarizing, hopefully, but at the very least, it's a supplemental episode, so you can skip it if you want.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy this interview with Jen Briney. So this is Election College, right? And we talk about presidential elections. Well, today we have a special guest, Jennifer Briney. She is the host of Congressional Dish. And if you want to hear an awesome podcast all about the horrible things that happened down Constitution Avenue, well, you need to subscribe to Congressional Dish. Hey, Jen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, my podcast is, it's definitely infuriating. I would love to have more good news, but unfortunately we keep electing terrible Congresses. So I'm hoping it'll be uplifting in the future, but right now it's anger inducing for sure.
Yeah, I commonly find myself just more frustrated that people pay more attention. We were joking about this a little bit beforehand, but that people pay more attention to the presidential election, which it admittedly is pretty important, than they do Congress, which is really where most of the decisions actually come from. So it's great to have you there kind of exposing things as they go on.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly why I started the podcast. It's because I blamed everything on the Bush administration, because that was the first time I even questioned what was going on in the world. But it wasn't until I started looking into how our system works that I realized that the president can do very little without Congress approving it and especially funding it. You know, Congress controls the money. So, you know, if the president wants to start a war but has no money, it's going to be like me saying I want to start a war. You know, you have to give them the money in order to do it. So Congress has all of the power. And yet, like you said, we're only talking about the presidency, and we all are voting for Congress on November 8th. In fact, we get to vote for the House of Representatives even more often than 4 years. We can actually fire every single one of them every 2 years. And so that's actually where I get my hope and faith in our future, because we can get rid of these people if we ever realize our own power. But our power is in Congress, not in the White House.
So we've talked a little bit in our podcast, Election College, about how Congress has had a role in electing the president because, well, let's face it, we're not a democracy. Mm-hmm. And we've talked, and I know in our email exchanges, we've mentioned 1824, which was the first corrupt bargain. And there have been other corrupt bargains. Usually, anytime you involve government, there's going to be some corruption, right? So tell us a little bit about what you have seen in exposing Congress, because that's what you do, right? You're exposing what is happening. What do you see playing out, perhaps even in this election, with the role Congress is going to have? Could it be that we have another 1824?
Well, I mean, it has to be close. So for those of you who don't know about 1824, there were four candidates, much like this year. I mean, we're being told that we only have two options, right? We're being told it's either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, and that's it. But it's actually not true. We actually have Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party on all 50, on the ballot in all 50 states. And then Jill Stein is on most of them. She's not on six states. So she's got ballot access in 89% of the counties in this nation. And so We do have four options, and that happened in 1824. And the thing was that Andrew Jackson got the most votes in the Electoral College. But in order to become the president, you have to get more than half. And he didn't. It was split four ways. And so when that happens, the election goes into the House of Representatives if no one can get more than half of the electors. And in that particular instance, instead of choosing Andrew Jackson, the dude who won, you know, the voters' choice poll, they picked John Quincy Adams instead. So the elite that were in the House of Representatives said, you know, voters, we're not listening to you. We're going to pick our guy. So that it's definitely possible. But this year, I mean, the conventional wisdom, who actually knows until November 8th, but the conventional wisdom is that Hillary's going to run away with it. And if that's true, if it's not a close election, then she's going to get the 271 she needs and she becomes president. But if it is closer than we think, and if one of these third party candidates can pick up a couple of states, then it goes into the House of Representatives. And what's interesting is there's a guy, Evan McMillan, who is doing, he's statistically tied with Trump and Hillary in Utah. And then Gary Johnson is the former governor of New Mexico. So that's five electoral votes. And so if it's close enough and it gets denied to Trump and Hillary, it would go in the House of Representatives. And the third person would be whoever gets the most electors. So what is kind of cool, though, is that we still have the choice to pick the House of Representatives that will pick our president, because it's going to be on the first day of the new Congress. And so on November 8th, I think the most important thing on your ballot is actually your choice for the House of Representatives, because there is a scenario where that could be your choice for the president too.
Right, absolutely. Do you think, can you imagine a scenario now? This is just your opinion, not of course factual, but can you imagine a scenario now in 2016 where the House would vote or elect someone that is not a leading party candidate?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I kind of see that, like, if Gary Johnson were the third person on the ballot this year. So let's just play the scenario where Trump and Hillary basically tie. Gary steals like 10 electoral votes and then it goes into the House of Representatives. So if there's three names, we know that Trump and Hillary are going to be two. If the third name is Jill Stein, she's basically to the left of Bernie Sanders, and the Democratic Party is solidly behind Hillary. So in that case, if the Democrats have the House, Hillary wins. But if it's a Republican pick, this is a really interesting year, because Donald Trump is very, I don't want to say hated, but he is strongly disliked by a lot of people in the Republican Party, where Gary Johnson is dopey for sure. But he is a former Republican governor of New Mexico. He didn't burn the state to the ground. He seems to be a reasonable person. There's a libertarian bent to a lot of the people that are in the House of Representatives. So if it is a Republican pick and the choices are Hillary, Trump, or Gary Johnson, oh, I don't know. That gets kind of interesting, doesn't it? Because they might see Gary Johnson as the responsible pick, and the Democrats might throw their weight behind him just to deny the election to Trump, since Hillary wouldn't be an option in a Republican House. So yeah, I do see scenarios where this could happen. I mean, it definitely is aided by the fact that the Republicans picked kind of a crazy man as their nominee. But yeah, there's crazy things can happen. And I think it would be fascinating if we actually saw it go into the House.
Just off the top of your head, do you think that there are any? It looks like, okay, Utah, there's that chance, which Utah is traditionally a Republican state. Do I even need to say traditionally? It is a Republican state. Well, does it make a difference? Does it need to happen in a Democratic leaning state where a third party candidate, which you've said Gary Johnson is the guy who has that more of a chance. Does that need to happen in a blue state?
No, it's all about the math. It's all about how many electors are siphoned off. So really, I mean, what you could have happen is, let's say Trump and Hillary are too close. Neither one gets 270. Gary Johnson gets 10 electoral votes, but then Jill Stein gets 9. Well, then Jill Stein wouldn't be on the ballot because she came in fourth, and there's only three names that would go to the House of Representatives. So Gary Johnson would still get it, but the third party stealing, not stealing, they don't belong to the Republicans and Democrats, but there can be a mishmash of different third party candidates that take the Electoral College electors away from the big two parties and could take it into the House of Representatives. So no, it doesn't have to be a Republican or Democrat state that does this. The only thing that matters is who is the number three slot is the one that goes into the House of Representatives. So it's like Evan could win. Evan McMillan gets Utah. Jill Stein gets Vermont and I don't know, New Hampshire. Probably not. I don't know what Jill Stein would get, honestly. but Gary Johnson, I mean, he apparently from his emails, he's going for Alaska, New Mexico, and he's actually got some money in New Hampshire too. And he was looking at Utah, but I think Evan McMillan's running away with it. He's Mormon. So I think the Mormon people there kind of like the Mormon guy. But yeah, it'll be interesting. If any third party candidates can take some of those states, we might have a very fun election coming up.
I've been, since probably about April, hoping, not only because of my own political leanings, but also because it would make an excellent show for Election College, that this scenario will play out. I don't know how it would fare for the future of our country, but I'm also really not sure how any of the candidates would fare for the future of our country at the moment. So, yeah, I just think it's really interesting. And I can only imagine how incredibly confused so many people will be who are not informed.
Oh, I think it would be fun. I think that there's no way to really learn better about our process than to see it play out. And in our lifetimes, we haven't seen this happen. I mean, none of us were alive in 1824. So that's why I think so many people are unaware that this is even an option, because we're always told that it's a two-party system, which is a lie. It's not a two-party system. But because so many people believe that and have never seen it happen any other way, then that's why they believe that. So I would love to see it. It doesn't scare me at all. I would love to see it go into the House of Representatives, because that's what would educate people. And then maybe at that point, they would realize how important Congress is.
Yeah, exactly. I think that when you consider that the president, whoever it is, I mean, Trump's going to have a hard time. Let's just face it. Let's just say that the House of Representatives and the Senate stay Republican, Trump is going to have a difficult time building a wall.
Yeah.
How's that going to happen? So, hey, why not? Why not blow it up, right?
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't think that, as far as blowing it up is concerned, I mean, in my opinion, the top two candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, are both very dangerous people in their own ways. And so, worst case scenario, we get people that are both anti-war. Gary Johnson and Jill Stein are not warmongers. And they might have their faults, but I just feel like it wouldn't even be a blow up situation. I mean, my hope is that one of these other people can get elected. I mean, it's probably not going to happen, but I would love to see it happen. And because I would love to see someone who's not a Democrat or Republican. These two parties have primary systems that, I mean, at least the DNC, we're now learning how their system was really, I don't want to use the word rigged, but it definitely, we know that they were using the people in the media to put out messages against Bernie Sanders. It was not a fair process that they were running there. And I just think that these two parties have gotten so much power that they're out of control. So I think at some point we're going to have to introduce other players into the election game.
We saw that something like that happen. I'm from Kentucky, and we actually had a situation where our senator ran for president, and he could not simultaneously run for president and re-election into the Senate. So at the last minute, they pull out the Republican primary. They have a caucus. Mm. Well, nobody knows how to caucus in Kentucky. We just haven't had that. And I mean, Republicans waited for hours to vote for president this year. I thought that was kind of an interesting scenario that the Republican Party could do that. And was endorsed.
That's the problem. The Democrats and Republicans, when it comes to the primary, they make up their own rules. These are private clubs. They do what they want. So a lot of voters in this country are saying the system is rigged, and it's like, no, we have two parties that we don't like the way they run things, and we have the option to vote outside of them. We're just not doing so that's really up to us. The only reason they have this much power is we continue to vote for them.
Right. They have no power unless we give it to them and we just keep handing it over.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
But I think that two-party system lie is a big reason for why that keeps happening. People think there are no other choices. And that's being exposed this year. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think it's only going to get more and more encouraging going forward, because now, I mean, I feel like the RNC was exposed during the Bush years, from like 9/11 through 2008. And then the DNC, this is when we really got to peek behind that curtain and see the blackness and ugliness that's back, as in like darkness, not like but like like, wow, that is not what I meant. But yeah, there's just some really ugly things about the way the DNC is operating and the way the media is complicit. And so now that we have both parties exposed, I think we're gonna see at least my generation and younger vote differently. And I'm pretty excited about it. That's what I'm excited for in this election. Even if Trump or Hillary becomes the president, which is most likely Hillary Clinton, I think we're going to see a much higher number of people voting third party than they've ever seen before. And so that's what I'm hopeful for, that a lot of people, we can just raise that number to be a big enough chunk to where they start to take notice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing how many friends and companions of mine are considering voting third party, who I never thought had any interest in politics at all before. And they're just so upset about the way things are going. They don't want to further the status quo. And they say, mm-hmm. I don't like either of them. And more often than not, the answer is, I'm going to vote for this other third party, rather than I'm just not going to vote. Which, if I remember correctly, 4 years ago, most of my friends were saying, I'm just not going to vote. They weren't excited about either candidate. Yeah. So I'm hearing a lot more engagement on those other ideas of, you know, third party. And these aren't our only options. And these options suck. So I'm not voting for them.
Yeah, it's almost like a protest vote just to say we're done with the D and the R. Like, you know, we want to show up and do something different. And I love to hear that from other parts of the country, because I'm in California. We have Kentucky. You're in Ohio, right, Ben?
Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Pennsylvania. So these are different parts of the country and we're all finding the same thing. So I think the internet is a big part of this. We're able to talk to each other. We're able to learn about these two candidates, even though they're not being allowed in the debates by the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is rigged by the Republicans and Democrats. And I will use the word rigged for that one. But with the internet, we don't need them. So I think our generation, we're going to change things and we're going to start to see it in this election. So I'm excited for next Tuesday, even if it's probably the most depressing election presidentially in our lifetime.
So Jen, where do we, you know, you talked about the media being complicit in some of this quote rigging, or maybe I shouldn't have said quote because you didn't say quote, but some of this rigging. And we've seen at least guesses and some studies that say Facebook is even suppressing some of the left side of news and things like that. How can we, do we have to watch C-SPAN all day? How do we get our news anymore if everybody has a bias that we can't rely on them?
I mean, that's why I started my podcast, because I wish I had an easy answer for that question. I was getting so frustrated because I was seeing the filters and, I was looking at my own career and being like, I want to be a journalist. And it's like, so where do I want to work? What's the peak job? You know, like, what am I aiming for? And then every single news organization, especially on the television, I caught them lying to me one by one. I just like was crossing them off until there was nothing left. And then I went online and it's like, you would think the New York Times is the pinnacle for writers, but they lied us into Iraq. And so it's just like, it's so hard to filter the information that I did start reading government documents and reports and bills. And, you know, there's some filtering that has to be done with government documents too, because you have to figure out which organization is writing them. Some of them are, you know, friendlier to the industries that they regulate than others. But the reports, that's as close as facts as you can get. And as far as knowing what the laws are being changed to, that's why I read the legislation, because it's like, you can't get much more primary document data than looking at the bill itself. And so what I decided to do with Congressional Dish was read those bills, watch the hearings to get some context and figure out why they were doing these things. And then for the whole how do people trust me factor, I spend a ridiculous amount of time on my show notes. So it's like when I read a bill, I'm linking not only to the bill, but I link to the provisions because I'm not a lawyer. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on in here. And so I link to it so that people can call me out if they think something's wrong or check it for themselves. Or what I found that people are doing is they'll get into a political conversation with like their dad or something and they'll use my show notes and be like, see, here it is in the bill. And that's what I love, you know? I give people all my articles. I give them links to the hearings. And I feel like that's kind of how we're going to have to do it now. We're going to have to be our own filters of information and just be aware of how much of the information is either not true or skewed for some kind of political purpose. We're in a kind of sad state right now.
Now, what, tell us a little bit, because I'm so curious, because your episodes, you're at least an hour long, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is action-packed. I have never heard one person talk for an hour, and you have everything, you're backing up every statement you make. How much time are you putting into each episode?
Too much. Work-life balance is something I'm really struggling with, to be honest. But right now, my process is about 2 weeks. So I have the first week that's mainly researching. And then the way I record it, because it is so information heavy, is I do it in pieces. So if I'm doing multiple bills, I'll read the bill, outline the bill, record that piece, and then go on to the next one. If I'm doing one big bill, I'm at least doing it in different takes. So it's like I'll record a section that kind of fits together, take a break, read over my notes again. Because doing that in all one sitting would just be entirely too much. But yeah, it's too much. I can tell you that right now. I am kind of encouraged though. I did an episode that was just, I felt bad. I was reading the, there's a bill that it became a law that really changes how we're doing education in the United States. And it was a really long bill and it was complicated and I needed an extra week and I felt really guilty about that. So I watched a hearing and I just kind of took all of the most interesting clips, gave people up front the information that they needed to understand what they were going to hear. And then I put it in order of like conversation topics, because what you see in hearings is that one person will talk about one topic and then an hour later, someone picks up where they left off. So I just kind of reordered it and people loved that episode. And so I'm actually considering doing a lot more of those in the next Congress. I think that's a way I might be able to go back to going weekly, because there was such a great response to that. And what I loved is that I didn't really have to be the person giving the information. You were able to hear for yourself. And that's really the thing. I don't want to be the star of the show. In fact, I don't like attention on me at all. So the less I'm in it, the better. And the fact that people actually enjoyed hearing nothing but Congress in that episode was so encouraging to me. So I'm still trying to figure out how to do this. My research intensive episodes, I love them. But yeah, the workload is, it's unsustainable. It's too much.
Yeah, speaking about that, I've seen a couple times now NPR and maybe a few other sites have been putting different congressional hearings and things like that on Facebook Live,
mm-hmm.
Streaming it through that. And the amount of live watchers they're having at that moment is, I expect myself to watch it. Like I do that kind of thing, but I feel like I don't know people who would also do that thing. And when I see the sheer amount of numbers coming through of how many people are watching it and interacting with it, it's pretty incredible. So I think that that is definitely a great way to engage people to actually get involved with what people are saying rather than just complaining or praising the laws later on.
And to understand why the laws are being crafted, because there's sometimes that I'll read a law and I'll be like, this is stupid. Yeah. And then I watch the hearing and I understand it. And then I'll go, okay, maybe this makes some more sense. So having the context, I feel, is so important. And as far as watching hearings are concerned, we have C-SPAN. The problem with C-SPAN is that not every hearing is on it. So a lot of the hearings that are ending up on Facebook Live or that people are actually watching, those are the popular ones, like the Wells Fargo hearing. Like a lot of us bank with Wells Fargo, so we want to know how we were getting screwed. But the ones, like there's certain ones that have to do with issues of war and peace that they don't put on C-SPAN. They only put on YouTube. Like I watched one last week that had 51 views. And on YouTube, you know, that's worldwide. When you actually watched it, you could see every chair in the actual room was reserved. Yeah. So there was no one in it.
Right.
And those are the ones that I'm super excited about. And so those are the type of things that I'm trying to find and highlight on Congressional Dish. Because even with, you have to remember that C-SPAN is also not a part of the government. That is a private corporation. And I've seen them burn us before too. My favorite C-SPAN moment in a like, oh my God, you're evil kind of way was in 2013, we were going to bomb Syria, right? President goes on TV, says, we're going to bomb this country that none of you have ever heard of. And we're like, okay, why? Well, our Congress could stop this, but they decided to stay on vacation. However, the British, our partners in war, their parliament did come back and have a debate. So I'm sitting there. I was actually recording it at the time on my television screen, and I'm watching this debate in British Parliament. And they were really like really getting into it. It's probably like an hour in, and this guy was making great points. And I was, it was just like the peak of the hearing. And then C-SPAN just goes, we're going to break away from this hearing right now. And they ended up playing an interview with the Cheney family. It was a, wow, a repeat. And that's when I just went, oh my God, something is messed up on C-SPAN. And I looked for like 20 minutes. I was able to find a feed through some EU thing. I don't know. But C-SPAN, they turned it off as soon as it was getting relevant and something that they didn't want us Americans to see. And that's when I went, oh, okay. So now I have to go outside of C-SPAN for information too. So we have very few uncorrupted sources. And here's the thing about C-SPAN. If you look on the website or on the TV, it'll say brought to you by cable. So it's brought to you supposedly by a public service, by like Comcast, Time Warner, like whoever you're paying for your cable. And that's a giant corporate, you know, thing. So the same thing that's tainting our Congress itself is also tainting where we get the information about it.
It's incredible.
Yeah. I'm always like a deliverer of good news, aren't I?
What are some of the issues that we should just be totally like we are not seeing unless we're listening to Jen Briney? What are we not hearing that we just need to wake up? What's going on that we're not hearing about?
So a big story that I've witnessed every single year of doing this podcast is the way we're funding our government. We don't do it right. And by we being Congress, the way it's supposed to be done is that we have 12 different segments of government, and they're all supposed to have separate government funding bills. And this is Congress's main job. So throughout the year, they have 12 committees that are supposed to craft bills very carefully. It's supposed to pass the House and the Senate in identical form. If it doesn't, they go to a conference committee, work out their differences. But each one of these is supposed to go through the process and get signed into law by September 30th. And in my 4 years of doing Congressional Dish, it's never happened. Instead, what we end up getting are these little extensions called continuing resolutions. And they always extend it to the same time, which is right between Thanksgiving and Christmas when none of us are paying attention. And then they'll fund the entire government in a 2,000-page bill that none of us had time to read. So it's like last year, 2,000 pages is not an exaggeration. That was released in the middle of the night on a Wednesday. The vote was Friday morning. Can you read 2,000 pages of anything in that amount of time?
And you know the people who wrote it didn't even read it all.
No. And in fact, that was what was crazy too. There was only one committee that looked at this. It was the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee gets to check out everything before it goes to the floor because they say whether or not amendments are going to be allowed. The Rules Committee actually used to not have that much power. Now it's one of the most powerful things in Congress because stuff like this happens. And so in the Rules Committee, you can actually see the congressmen and their staff behind them furiously highlighting, just trying to get through as much as they can before the hearing is over. And then right at the end of the hearing, this is about a three-hour hearing, Justin Amash comes running through the doors and they let him sit down. And he says, by the way, there's some major cybersecurity legislation that's been protested all over the country that was attached to this bill. And I just want to make sure that someone said it out loud. And it got pushed into law because these are must-sign pieces of legislation. So every time we hear, oh, the government's about to shut down, this is a intentional strategy that is used to get us to the brink of shutdown so that we will allow things to become law that would never be allowed to become law on their own. It is a strategy and they do it every single year. And this year, that is set for December 9th. They're doing it again. So every time you hear a shutdown showdown, you need to be aware that those bills are going to be stuffed with things that you don't want becoming law.
Yeah, absolutely. Need to be vigilant. Need to, I don't know how much good it does, but writing writing your elected officials is at least a sign of protest in my mind, if not actually somewhat influential, if enough of us are doing it. And I feel like, you know, sometimes it'd be easier to say, oh, who cares? They're going to do whatever they want anyway. And that probably is the truth. But it certainly doesn't mean that we shouldn't be still standing up for what we think is right.
Well, Debbie Downer here does have a bit of good news for you on that front.
Good.
Yeah. So my 100th episode, I was really lucky. I got to talk to Jack Abramoff. And if you're not familiar with Jack, he was probably the most famous lobbyist there ever was. He is a master at influencing Congress to the point that he was so good at bribing officials, he went to jail for 4 years. But Jack got out and he's kind of bitter about the way he was treated by the people who were his friends until he got in trouble. And now he's really talking to people being like, this is the system we have and this is how I corrupted it and this is how it works. It was amazing to talk to him. And the thing that I took away from that and I will never, ever forget is I asked him, well, I've been telling people to call and email and walk into their congressman's office. Does that actually make a difference? And he said without hesitation, yes, it does. And so and the reason is that all of the money in the world, you can collect it. But if you're not getting the votes, you're not getting your job back. So what the money buys you is the advertisements on TV and the stupid things on Facebook that all of us ignore. Like, that's what that money is for. But if the people still aren't voting for you, you're not going to win. And so when someone hears that a voter from their district wants to talk about some issue, if enough people are calling, they have to pay attention. They don't have a choice. What I also learned is that the way that it works when you call is they've never once asked for my number. I call my congressman all the time. They don't ask for your number, they ask for your zip code. And so if you're really passionate about something, call every day because you're just on a tally. All they do is these staff members that you talk to, all they're doing is making a tally. And so when the congressman says, what are people calling about today? Well, 50 people called about, you know, subject A, 12 people called about subject B. And you just want to be one more mark on that tally. And that's all it takes. And it's not hard at all. And then when I watch these congressional hearings, the numbers don't even have to be that big. Like, Rosa DeLauro, she's a congressman from Connecticut. She was talking to a group of people that included other congressmen. And she was like, well, you know, I had 20 people come into my office and talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I was like, 20 people? I have that many on my kickball team. So, you know, like, we actually can make a very big difference without that many people just by communicating with our representatives. Problem is, we're not doing it.
Yeah. Well, I confess, I have not been writing my congressman. And
it's fun. It's easy. And you guys are podcasters. You should record it.
Yeah.
I do. I've done it a few times on my show.
Nice.
Because the best one is when you call and the person that you're talking to doesn't know what you're talking about. And that's always interesting because you can go, well, do you know that this is happening? Because they're always staff members. They don't know what's really going on. So you can be like, well, let me give you some details. Would you like me to email this to you and just be super nice to them? But if you get them talking about it in the office, you know, that's how stuff actually gets done. So you have an opportunity to educate people. You can add your names to the tally. The staffers are always bored, so they're definitely willing to talk to people that aren't crazy or screaming at them. So it's so easy to make a difference. And that's my favorite thing that I've learned about Congressional Dish is like, yes, all this stuff is frustrating, but we have a lot of power and it's not hard to do. We can do it without leaving the couch. So it's kind of beautiful.
And every 2 years we have that opportunity to have a direct say in what happens in Washington. That's awesome because when you think about how bleak the presidential campaign is this year, and let's face it, at least half of us are going to wake up after Election Day and be like, well, I'm glad that's over. Or, that sucked. now what? We still have a say. We can influence, you know, in January, in February, we have a voice still.
Absolutely. And I always say that the check and balance on a crazy president is not the other person running for president, it's Congress. So, you know, if you are a Trump voter and you hate Hillary, you need to make sure that you have a Congress that's going to fight her. And if you're a Hillary voter and you're afraid of Trump, Well, then you need a Congress who's going to fight him. I mean, that's really where all the real power lies. It's not in the other political party, because on the things that really matter, like war and peace issues, international trade agreements that trump our laws, you know, there's very big issues where those two parties are completely united. And so what we need to do is have more people that are going against the powers that be on an issue by issue level. And it's just, you know, voting Democrat because you're mad at Republicans or vice versa, that is not the right strategy. You have to do it on a separations of powers, like by branch strategy. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to get out there, is just to be like, we need to think about how our system was designed, you know, without political parties. There's nowhere that these two parties are mentioned in the Constitution, but the separation of powers is certainly there. And if we think about it like that, we can really capture a lot of our power back.
Yeah. So, folks, if you're like the guy I talked to just the other day who said, I'm not even going to vote this year, remember that even if you're dead set against voting for the presidential seat, which you shouldn't be, you should vote something, that's not the only thing on the ballot. And that's certainly not the only important thing in the world. Lots of other ways to influence things in general, besides just the seat of the presidency.
Absolutely. And we've only discussed the federal government. Right. I mean, we have state people to vote for, local people, the ballot initiatives. You know, so it's like if you have a friend that's, you know, just like a college student, like, I don't know anything about the presidency. It's like, well, five states are going to get to legalize weed. So show up for that, you know, and vote for the other ones while you're there. So there's so many things that can bring you to the polls. In my state, California, we have 17 ballot initiatives. So there's so much more on the ballot than just the presidency. And so many people just don't even bother looking at the 95% of their ballot that has nothing to do with Trump and Hillary.
Right. Right. And you talk about taxes. I mean, my goodness, I know in our little, the little city that I live in is 1 square mile with its own school district. And that has a bigger impact on how much I'm going to pay in taxes, how my child is going to be educated each day, and a myriad of things right here. So get involved, download your ballot, just Google it now. You can see your local ballot and get active.
It's gotten so much easier with the internet. Everything has. Researching who these people are. I mean, my plan, I don't know most of the people on my ballot yet, but I have a Sunday and I'll watch football and research my ballot. Like, I don't have to leave the couch for this stuff. It's gotten so easy. There's no excuse not to
do it.
Right.
It's awesome. Well, very cool. Thank you so much, Jen. Where can people connect with you, find your podcast, and, any parting words?
Well, I assume if you're listening to this podcast, then you know how to find podcasts. So just go and search Congressional Dish and you will find me. You can also go to congressionaldish.com for my awesome show notes, where you can prove all of your friends and family wrong. And then I also have a free Congressional Dish app, so you can get the show notes and the podcast in the same spot. And that can be found in the Apple App Store and in Google Play.
Very nice.
And then you can find me on Twitter at Jen Briney. That's the best way to actually reach me. So thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on and talking about how horrible everything is in life.
Yes, but the hope. We have lots
absolutely.
Of hope.
Yes, no, we're right there with you on all fronts, I think. So cool. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.